SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three at the races, and going to catch up with either Seth or Jeremy as soon as Casey lands one of them. In the meantime, let me get you another piece of news. And well, in fact, Seth is here, lurking in the background. So we'll say good morning, Seth.
Good morning.
Good morning. A couple of quick things that I've been waiting. I didn't get to this last week. In the crush of post Preakness, but the Pillars of the Turf, the Hall of Fame, which had a pretty narrow class, obviously, with Heavenly Prize, and then you know we had a couple of the historic additions as well, but they're adding a nice dozen to the Pillars of the Turf, and that includes Lucky Baldwin, of course, who helped originate basically the whole starting foundation of Santa Anita, and Augie Belmont is also going to be added, and Cock Campbell. It's rare, actually, that these pillars are that a pillar is alive. In this case, Cott can stand up for everybody. Penny Chenery is going in, as is John Galbraith, and of course Darby Dan Farm and Sea Hero and so much more. Arthur Hancock, Claiborne, and I'm sure representatives of the family, Arthur and Seth. Hal Price Headley is going to be added. John Morrissey, famous here in Saratoga and in New York politics and sports too. Terrific bare knuckle fighter. Dr. Stroob, another famous name in Santa Anita history and California racing. William Collins Whitney, slightly more among the Whitneys, a little bit more obscure to those of us that are more familiar with Harry Payne and Sonny Whitney, and they're both going in as well. So the trio of Whitneys together as Pillars of the Turf, W.C. Whitney, Harry Payne Whitney, and Cornelius Vanderbilt, Sonny Whitney, all going in a terrific, historic set of 12 pillars of the turf for the Hall. Seth, good morning.
Good morning. And, it was. They announced it, as you say, last week, and a nice set of the pillars of the turf after a surprising, we talked about that before, only one of the finalists getting in with the 50% level. I thought they would have a full slate, but only the one got in. But I want to go back a little earlier this year. I wish they would put these Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor people on the Hall of Fame Day celebration. Instead, there's a lunch maybe next month or this month. No, I think it's sometime in June, but I'm not sure about that. But the media people this year, it was Barney Nagler, Jack Whitaker, and Mike Meach. And so I was happy to see Mike go in, because Mike, the longtime horse racing writer, retired from that, I think, just within the last year at the Saratogian, but he's written pieces for Daily Racing Form, done some books on the history of Saratoga, and of course worked for a long time at Capital OTB TV as well, doing the Saturday morning show with Mark Desano. But Mike, not just a knowledgeable horse racing guy, but a really nice guy as well. Former teacher in Saratoga as well. But it was nice to see him on that list of the Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor, which I think is only 3 or 4 years old that they started to recognize the media people.
Yeah, maybe it might be, give or take, maybe in a year or two earlier. But it is. It's a nice picking up the lead of baseball and virtually all the other sport Hall of Fames as well. One of the nice summer day, one of the nice days. If you over the years, and granted, it is going to be a pretty I won't say brief session, but if you've never been to a Hall of Fame ceremony, or if you know there's been years where there just was going to be too many people thronging the pavilion over at the Fasig Tipton Sales Grounds, this might be a good year for those of you that have never been to try to go. It doesn't matter. I mean, in this case, it'll be you know the Phipps family and Shug, and that makes it worth attending anyway. But it might be a perfect year for anybody that's never been to the Hall of Fame ceremony to come. Plus, you know, as many living Hall of Fame members as possible, they come, trainers and jocks as well. So it's really a special day here close by in Saratoga, and it'll be special tomorrow night. I'll also take this opportunity, Seth, to remind everybody, 7 o'clock at the museum, Jeff Carl is going to host the Tom Durkin best moments of his race call career in New York, his favorite Belmont calls, and try to attend. It's free as well and should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that event, I did a little bankroll event down at the Clubhouse Racebook last Friday, and I had 3 or 4 people walk up to me and say they were going to head up to that. So I think it'll be well attended. Tom certainly has the story for everything. He can keep the event going over the. I also enjoyed his commercial during the last break, his beef sandwich commercial. That was great too. But Tom, you know, you've had him on many times. I've had him on TV, and he's one of those guys you just say good morning, and he's off and running. He's got a bunch of great stories from his career. So I'm sure the event at the museum will be fabulous.
Absolutely, and since we referenced, you mentioned Mike Veach and his writing, you sent me a fascinating note overnight, and going to look forward. You know, it's been kind of a quiet year so far in terms of publications when it comes to horse books. Usually, particularly around Triple Crown time, there'll be some releases, and there is Out of the Clouds, the book by Linda Carroll and David Rosner. That's come out, and I got to get them on. And this should be a fun read, and I have not had a chance other than to kind of thumb through. But the story of Stymie and Hirsch Jacobs looks terrific. So I'm mentioning that. But you wrote to me about a family friend that has got a Saratoga backdrop publication, one of a series of stories. Tell everybody about it.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Jim Ziskin and the Ziskin family, when I grew up, lived right around the corner from me. I went to school with Jim's brother, Ben, and Jim was a couple years behind me, and there was a brother in between, and there was a couple out in front, and there was a couple of sisters at the end of the string. Both of the parents were doctors, and they had, I think it was 9 Ziskins. I'm almost positive. So there was a whole slew of them that I, as I said, I knew from growing up. They were right around the corner. But Jim got in touch with me last summer. He lives out in Seattle now. And he has a series of books, paperback books based on a lead character called Ellie Stone. And she's kind of a young crime-solving reporter. But the interesting part of it is it takes place in a city, in upstate New York City called New Holland, which is essentially based on Amsterdam. And this whole series of books, I think there's maybe 4 of them before the latest one, and the latest one drops, I think, next week. You'll be able to get it. You can go online now. Jim has a website, jamesziskin.com. Folks can check that out and get more information. But the latest book is called A Stone's Throw. And again, the lead character is Ellie Stone, so there's Stone in all the titles. But A Stone's Throw, the latest one, is kind of based on a farm similar maybe to Saratoga, Sanford Stud Farm in Amsterdam, and it's called Tempesta Farm, and it is located in the city of New Holland, again, based on Amsterdam. So again, it's based a little bit on Sanford Stud Farm, or the idea of Sanford Stud Farm, and a lot of it also takes place at the racetrack, Saratoga, and so there's a racing theme to it. And because of that, last summer, Jim, as I say, who lives in Seattle, came to the area, and he was doing a little research, and we had lunch one day, and he was checking out horse racing vocabulary terms and some of the technical aspects of the game, because he wanted to make those correct for the book. And so he sent me a copy the other day. That's why I got in touch with you. I said, you know, at some time, if you want to stick him on, maybe to promo the book. Sometime this summer, he'll come back into town, and I'll have him on TV in the morning up from the back stretch. But I think it's going to be fun. I'm a couple chapters in, and there's a character in it. This is interesting, too. There's a character in it called nicknamed Fadge, which is based on a real guy that we all knew growing up. It was like one of those candy store soda fountain places where you would go as a kid, you know, a teenager. And Fadge was the son of the owner who eventually took over and ran the place. And so he was probably a little bit older than us, but he was a real horse racing guy. He used to drive this old beat-up Mercedes, and he was big when the track opened. He did the track all the time. but he had racing form all the time he'd have out. And as I thought back on it, he was probably part of the reason my group of friends all got into the horse racing game, because he was, you know, we'd hang out at the place and he'd be talking horse racing all the time. But he's kind of a character that helps move the story along a little bit too. So that was fun. And the book is actually dedicated to him. So I think it's going to be a fun book. And as they say, it releases next week. And it was just fun. Jim himself, you know, you can read his bio on the website, but spent a lot of time abroad. But then it was kind of interesting. He was in Hollywood for a number of years, and he knows a number of different languages, so he was doing some kind of subtitling work out there, but eventually moved up to Seattle, and now with this series of books. And again, the latest one is called A Stone's Throw. So if people are looking for a little summer reading, maybe on the beach by the pool or just sitting out in the backyard, that may be something to think about.
Well, this is the sixth in the series, and we should also, I'll add that, you know, having looked into it after I saw your email this morning, they're set in the 60s. It's not the modern, it's not a modern era, but set in the 60s. And so, you know, the female journalist character, you know, faces certain, you know, certain kinds of difficulties and frustrations anyway. But for those that like series, and I'm a big sucker for these kinds of series, and I'm glad you pointed this out to me, and I'll probably start from the beginning because I like, you know, doing them in order. But some of my favorites, Andrew Vax, who is rather, it's not for everyone, rather hard boiled, but also, who else? Jonathan Vallon, the Harry Stoner mysteries that are set in Cincinnati are great, and this seems to fit that mold. So we'll invite people to James W. Ziskin with a Z, Z-I-S-K-I-N, James Ziskin, and A Stone's Throw, and it's got a horse on the cover, and it's got, you can see the track, you can see Saratoga in the background. Anybody that likes, you know, these kinds of backdrops with the racetrack, always fun, whether it's the Thin Man or...
Should be fun. As I say, I'm a couple of chapters in, looking forward to it.
Cool.
And with, you know, with a horse racing background, should interest a lot of people that listen. Speaking of which, when you talked about some of the other series, remember the old Stephen Dobbins books? Based in Saratoga, such and such, such Saratoga?
No.
Which, you're not familiar with those?
No.
I say it, they were out in the 70s, and I kind of bring it up because I hadn't thought about them in a long time. But I think his lead character was named Charlie Bradshaw, and they were mysteries, and he was a private eye, as I remember. But they all took place at the racetrack. But the interesting part was, they would, you know, they'd go eat downtown and mention a restaurant downtown. As you read the book, it was just kind of fun. I think he was a professor at Syracuse University. And there's a whole series of them. Now I have to, well, you can too, or your listeners. Now I have to go to the internet and look it up and see if they're still kicking around and still
yeah, they are.
Out there.
They are. Okay. I'm looking right now.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, Stephen Dobbins, D-O-B-Y-N-S.
Yeah.
Saratoga Payback.
Yeah, there was a whole series of them. Saratoga this, Saratoga that.
Saratoga Long Shot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, look at this. I'm glad you told me. I'll look this up. This is Saratoga swimmer. How fun. Saratoga
snapper. Yeah, they were a lot of fun. Yeah.
Saratoga strong box.
And does it say, was I right? Well, they're published in the 70s, if I remember. Maybe the 80s, early 80s.
Well, let me see. Here's Saratoga strong box. 98 for Saratoga strong box. So it goes.
I'd say that was one of the latter ones.
This was the 10th. This was the 10th in the series.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll put a tweet out with and Seth, you can retweet it.
You know what? I am seriously, by next week, because you were talking in the last segment, we will be down for Belmont. And I'm thinking I want to be up and running so when we're down with potential Triple Crown, I'm serious. I'm on it, baby.
You're on it. All right, we'll see. Meanwhile, let's talk about it because we didn't talk last Wednesday. We were off, and your thoughts coming in, kind of a hybrid visit where you can, you know, talk about your post Preakness impression, and then, you know, where you're, whether you've morphed at all, or whether your opinion, you know, about the probability of a Triple Crown sweep, if it's grown or diminished in your eyes, but some thoughts since we last spoke.
You know, the Preakness, I think if you're going to be realistic, if he does, you know, Justify does move backwards a little bit with the two closers coming up and the buyer going in the wrong direction, but he was facing a challenge throughout the early parts of the race from a really good horse and Good Magic, so you have to take that into account. It was an awful racetrack. But again, I'm a buyer guy, and so with the buyer going back, that counts a little bit. So I think he comes into the Belmont with a chink in the armor, and I certainly think if you're going to take shots against, you can kind of hang your hat on a couple of things. And I also think if you took Bob Baffert's name off this horse, a lot more people would be willing to kind of recognize the chinks in the armor. But all of that said, Bob Baffert is associated with him, and he's come into this a few times already and got it done with American Pharoah. But also you look at that workout yesterday, and it seems like the horse is still on his toes. And as I said to people over the last week or so, maybe this is taking a toll, and that was represented by what we saw in the Preakness. But I still just have the feeling at this point he's better than the rest of them. And I think he can regress maybe and still get it done. And I think the Belmont itself plays into his strengths and his potential pace scenario where he might be able to get out there and kind of lope along and then just have the real advantage over him. So at this point, I'm still, you know, you have to wait to see what the final field is. And, you know, post positions I don't think are as important in the Belmont, but you still want to wait and kind of make final decisions. But I think maybe he has an edge on this particular group. And the funny thing is, I wonder, you know, if he does get it done, it historically it'll be kind of a funny situation where you go back to the 40s and they got clumped together, and you go to the 70s and they got clumped together. There was big gaps in between, but now we'd have a couple within a couple of years, as it were, so they would kind of clump together again, and it would seem it would just be a strange aberration that every, you know, few decades they get clumped together like this. But we'll see if it does happen down at Belmont. I do, again, though, think he just might be better than this bunch. And I still, I went into the Derby looking at that field and what had happened in the last set of prep races and thought at that time it was a pretty strong three-year-old crop. Now with the Derby and the Preakness under it, I'm not as convinced. But again, we don't really, you can't really define the crop until you get into late summer and early fall and they start to face older horses and whatnot. So I reserve judgment there, but I'm a little more leery than I was going into the Derby, and given that, if he's special, again, then he has a little bit of an edge on this group going in. So I'm probably still tilting towards him, but again, as I say, if folks are taking shots, there's potentially some chinks in the armor.
Well, it's the same scenario that we have faced. I thought that the conversation this morning we had with Tim Layden, Tim put a really appropriate spin on it regarding the proximity to American Pharoah and the fact that, this one only feels different because we've seen it done, whereas we were waiting and waiting, and it was, you know, Lucy and Charlie Brown and the football, you know, over and over and over again, you know, since 1978. And as a result, you just, you came to doubt even the viability of a horse doing it again. But given, like you suggested, actually, with Baffert, you know, given it's him and, you know, then what we're seeing, one thing that's changed is the fact that we get to see, you know, virtually every morning that the horse is going to be preparing for the assignment. And that, I suppose, you know, taking the pulse on a daily basis, Seth, of how he's coming in, I think we've got a much better picture of, you know, of where he stands, being able to watch, like yesterday, where, you know, even critics, even people that, I don't want to say rooting against, but people who are, you know, taking a dubious stance, even they have to say, you know, the horse looks absolutely no worse for wear coming into this race, having exited, you know, a performance that some people seem eager to criticize.
Yeah, and that, as I say, that workout kind of makes me lean even more towards he's in a good position, because it says he's still on his toes. You know, we have had over the years, though, those kind of situations where then the race is run and there's, you know, the horse runs second or third or fifth, and gee, you know, we had the great workouts, and it seemed like, but it's different. It's a mile and a half, and that's why it's tough. So I think even if you're confident in the horse, you have to recognize how tough this feat is to accomplish, and it's been proven by the limited number of horses that have done it, regardless of the number of horses that came in with two wins and had the opportunities. So you automatically come in thinking it's a tough thing to do. He wins the two, and he just looks like the kind of the best of his generation at this point in the year. But there are question marks. But then you add in a workout like that, you add in Baffert. There are check marks in the proper columns where I think, again, they're chinks in the armor, but if you're on board with them, I think you can have some level of confidence.
Well, looking forward to getting down. I'll head later this afternoon down to New York. When is the OTB contingent arriving?
We should be down sometime the day before. We're going to do a little broadcasting Friday and Saturday, so I think we'll get there you know, fairly early on Friday, so we can get kind of a head start down there. So that'll be the game plan.
Excellent. And then I'll ask you the same question as a follow-up. We haven't had a chance to digest this either with you, but got a lot of positive feedback from listeners urging them to bet heavy on whatever opinion they formulated, as opposed to the way we typically approach Derby, where you have to cast a wide net and you want to, you know, be in position depending on, you know, on how you saw the race, and, you know, whether you keyed off of horses that you thought were going to clunk up for the bottom of the super or try, or however you approach, or whether you keyed off Justify or Good Magic. I mean, we talked a lot about that. But when it came to Preakness, and I brought this up with you as well, the concept of betting $10 tries and $20 exacta and getting people to leave their comfort zone in terms of denomination. And I'm just curious what you did. And of course, the wet weather put a literal damper on, you know, the wagering enthusiasm to some extent, even though they managed to set, you know, wagering number records. But what did you do on that front in terms of betting the race?
Well, I hit the pick three that ended in the Preakness, I think paid $4. And I played a pick three looking, and I had more than Justify. I was looking for somewhere along that sequence for something a little crazy to happen, and maybe Justify does get beat. so I could have juiced up a pick three nicely. So I was just picking my spots, admittedly, with the situation, the off the turf races and whatnot on Saturday. And as it turned out, I mean, that was one of the stories of the day to me, and the chalky results throughout the course of the afternoon, given the track condition, given off the turf. A lot of times, I mean, we're up at Saratoga every day, and I always say I kind of like the off the turf days because, you don't want a whole season of them, but a couple of days in the rain are kind of fun because you can handicap a little bit differently. And on those days, yeah, there are some races they come off the turf and horses just jump off the page. But typically something crazy happens in some of those races. And just Saturday, Preakness Day, nothing crazy happened. It was really funny given that, you know, the situation with the weather and the off-the-turf events. So, I kind of picked my spots, and I had to pick three where I hope something crazy happened. Nothing crazy ever did happen. I anticipate similar kind of things coming up Belmont Day. You know, given all the stakes action, you just kind of have to pick your spots a little bit. And again, I would agree, if you see one you feel very comfortable with, I would not argue just upping your increment and taking it's an $18 exacta, but you have it 5 or 10 times, something like that, as opposed to kind of jumping around and looking for the crazy things to happen, because there will be a couple of those horses, at least two or three on the card, that will just stand out.
Absolutely. Starting to assemble the rest of the cards for Thursday and Friday as well, and then into Saturday, and the stakes programs portion looking terrific. We'll get a chance to sit with Andrew Burns and get everybody the current probables for the supporting stakes. And for those that are asking, there are the two Friday, Saturday, two-day double wagers that the Met Mile and Belmont wager, and then I think the Brooklyn, Brooklyn Met, and the True North Met and the Brooklyn Belmont, I think. Either way, I'll clarify and get the right answer on that.
Plenty of time to look that up. Friday's always a good day, too. So we're looking forward to getting down and being there for that to broadcast a little bit. But Friday has been the last few years a nice stakes day as well. So a couple of good days of racing coming up down at Belmont. Now we just have to keep our fingers crossed that the weather holds up, because certainly the first two legs of the Triple Crown have been disappointing. Although, again, I talked about stories beyond justify winning the Preakness. To me, one of the stories was how chalky it was. One of the other stories was all those off-the-turf events, the weather the way it was. The handle was crazy. Yeah. I was doing television that afternoon doing handicapping and talking to the guys in the control room and saying, man, I feel bad for the Maryland Jockey Club and the folks down at Pimlico, because as a horse racing fan, you want these big days to turn out well for all the venues. And I thought, oh, man, this is really going to – but no, people still were betting with both fists, which is great.
Very much so. Speaking of betting, you got anything today? Did you look at anything? It's opening day at Delaware.
I don't, just because of that. I did television on Monday, so it's kind of a day off. And I look, a little later on, I'll take a look at the opening card at Delaware, but I haven't looked at it yet. That was really the only thing that kind of intrigued me today. As I say, it's kind of a day off for me.
So. I hear you. All right. Well, Seth, I will see you down there, but we'll talk next week ahead of seeing you.
Looking forward to it. And good luck to everybody on their plays today and over the next week or so.
Seth Merrill, folks, and you'll see him at Belmont and the coverage at Capital OTB. And when he launches this Seth Merrow /Equidaily Twitter, it'll be one of the biggest things in the history of the internet.
You know what? I'm thinking of Instagram too. I know this will blow your mind. Yeah,
ooh.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Yeah, I know. I do. That would blow your mind.
Instagram, that's great. Especially the Instagrams, you know, from 11:45 on Caroline Street during the summer. Those will be the ones we're really looking forward to.
I told you, I pledged I'm not going to be the guy to show my lunch on Twitter and show how great my hamburger was. So there will be no 11:45s on Instagram. It'd be great. It would boost my followers, but no, that's not going to happen.
I don't know. I can see a few Saratoga late night eats, D'Andrea's, and what's the burrito place? I could see
the Doughboys. Oh man, now I'm blanking out because I go in there for pizza every once in a while. It's right next to my hangout.
Exactly. Well, see, you got to be in that frame of mind and. Stumbling up and down Caroline Street.
I'm not stumbling. I'm usually walking pretty steady.
You're upright. I agree. I love it. Seth Merrow, everybody. Let's take a break. Our last of the morning, and we'll wrap up and send you out into Wednesday at the races. And I'll get ready to get down to Belmont and set up shop for the run to the Triple Crown Tribe. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
What are most NairaBets is your online home for horse racing and betting. With NairaBets, you can play hundreds.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full card DRF past performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multitrack today.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Want you to know it's time to go. Yeah, we are done. I want you to see that I need, oh, to be.
almost done, and we haven't used this one to close out in quite a while, but I like this, and nice change of pace. A couple of news and notes. We can't find Jeremy today, so no Jeremy Plonk to close out. There were some early draws for... Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold everything. There is Jeremy Plonk. We'll only get to talk to him for about 5-6 minutes, but Jeremy turns up. You're like a bad penny.
The rumors of my death are greatly demised. I did leave the Preakness with a good souvenir of pneumonia or something close to it, but other than that, I'm in pretty good shape, Steve.
Well, I'm glad to catch up, and same conversation with you. We didn't talk earlier in the week, but you know, here we are getting ready for Belmont and countdown to the crown, and you always are preparing for Derby with it, but depending on the Belmont or the Preakness result, the term countdown to the crown really becomes relevant, and certainly feels like it here 9 days away from the test of the champion.
It is, and, you know, this is kind of the idle week, so what do you do with the column this week? And I'm going to take an approach on Friday's release to compare Justify with Bob Baffert's other horses who have come to this spot, who had the tougher task between Silver Charm, Real Quiet, War Emblem, and, of course, the success story in American Pharoah. So we'll compare those five horses in a lot of different statistical and analytical looks and, you know, competition, margins, you know, those sort of things like that. And who they're facing and how tough their task is. And we'll look at it a little bit from a historical perspective. I tend to think those things are productive in that, especially in a race like the Belmont, which we just don't see that many of. You know, I mean, what everyday racing apples to apples are you going to compare to a mile and a half of Belmont? It's not the kind of race that, you know, lines up like a regular 20,000 claimer to track you see six times a week. So, you know, we'll take a little bit different look at it this week, and we'll compare them that way. And to let a little bit of the cat out of the bag, I think this is Baffert's second best chance in the five.
Well, give us a pro and a con. I mean, what has to go right for him to win? What beats him?
I think the pace is his pro. You know, it's a race that generally won fairly forward, and a horse that can pound out a tempo. There's not a lot of other pace in the race, so I think that works for Justify. I think the con is the wagons and the cavalry are kind of coming after him. Look at his win streak. Every single victory of his, the margin has diminished. His biggest win margin was his debut, and every single time it got a little closer, a little closer, a little closer, a little closer. And, you know, how fast has he run? It's a real question mark because, look, I'm not a big speed figure devotee. People know that who follow my handicapping over the years. I like the eye over the buyers, if you will, for a little survivor pun. But if you do look at the numbers, these guys have had a very difficult task in trying to put numbers together. What do you do with a 204 and one Derby? You know, I mean, that was a very difficult race to try to assess how fast or slow it was. And what do you do with that Preakness Stakes where it was obviously a quagmire? It was the second fastest run in the last 8 years, yet it got the worst buyer figure in the history of the figures. That track was fast at Pimlico. They ran a couple sprints and 9 and change on the card, even though it was a bog. I don't envy the guys who had to put numbers and the computers and anyone else involved in the process of trying to figure out how fast this horse is running in the last two races. If you are somebody who is just, you know, dead fast in your numbers, maybe he's vulnerable then. The eyeball test tells me that they've been getting closer. You know, margins are margins, and six times in a row they've gotten closer and closer and closer now as he goes to this sixth start, and we'll see if they finally get him. He reminds me a little bit of California Chrome in that I think he was clearly the best horse through the first two legs of the Triple Crown, but you were kind of waiting around saying, look, if somebody in the weeds is going to run a race, they might be able to get him.
Well, we're gonna find out, and we'll have a field assembled now less than a week away, Tuesday, 5:30. The people can watch on NYRA's websites the draw from the stadium, from Citi Field, which should be fun, and then Baffert's going to throw out the first pitch. So we'll have a pretty unique and festive circumstance there on Tuesday, and I think there'll be a... there'll be a big turnout, I imagine, for this. The Orioles are in town, too, so it's got American National League crossover appeal. Going to also, of course, look forward to the rest of the, you know, the 3 days. They're trying to make this into a festival style of racing. What else are you going to focus in on as we get closer here, Jeremy?
I'd like to see, you know, just one horse step up in their training, maybe, that kind of moves you to think that they are the one. Because I think there are a couple candidates for the upset. You know, I think Bravazza was a candidate for the upset with a run-all-day style. Vino Rosso, since this race at Tampa, I've kind of been saying this is the Belmont, this is the Fletcher Tapper kind of model. He seems to fit, you know, very well in there. I think Hofberg makes a lot of sense. But if you don't, like, justify in the Belmont, and you think, you know, Foundation is a deal going a mile and a half and all that, then maybe Hofberg with only, you know, the handful of career starts might not be the way to go, but he galloped out so well. If he's doing well, you trust in Belmont. You know, I think there's three or four candidates in here that you could throw a fly in the ointment, and so I want to figure out which one it is. You know, I mean, I'm not the kind of person that says, okay, well, let's take four or five shots to beat this horse. I'd like to find the right one. And so I'm still shopping for that horse, but among the ones I mentioned there, those are the ones that I'm kind of hoping to find that last little push over the edge to say, let's take a shot at him at a price, because I think you'll get a price. I mean, obviously, this horse is going to be, you know, 3 to 5, you know, depending how many are in the field. If they get 10 or 11, you know, that'll be a difference. But he's going to be heavily bet. And I think the fact that American Apparel was successful, he was only 4 to 5, if you recall. American Apparel wasn't like a 1 to 9 shot. He was only 4 to 5 in the Belmont because so many horses had lost before him in the same spot. I think it scared some folks away. I think if you're a value seeker on Justify, American Pharoah winning might push that price down a little bit now, because people don't think it's impossible, you know, for a horse to win the Triple Crown anymore. So I don't know. Right. I mean, you know, what kind of price you get is going to be a key.
Agreed, and that note basically where we started when we began the conversations this morning earlier with Tim Layton. Well, Jeremy, I appreciate it. We'll get final thoughts ahead of the Triple Crown Try with you next week.
Take care, everybody, and check out the ExpressBet wager guide out this Friday for next week's big race.
Well, and it'll be out as soon as I send my send my analysis. So I'll
get the work, Vic.
I will. I'll wrap it up. I knew that was coming. We'll send you out to the race day at opening day at Delaware. Wish everybody best of luck there. Want to thank Rich Glazer and Tim Layden, Sid Fernando, Dr. Stephen Allday, Seth Merrow, and Jeremy Plonk. Talk to you tomorrow morning from beautiful Belmont Park as our coverage starts in earnest from Elmont. Good luck if you're playing, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow, Thursday. Haskin, Black, Rich Eng, and much, much more. Thanks for listening.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.